From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. Today on Write the Book, you'll hear our guest interviewer, Kim McQueen, in conversation with Samir Pandya, whose new novel, Members Only, came out in July from Mariner Books. Samir Pandya was longlisted for the Penn Open Book Award for his story collection, The Blind Writer, and is the recipient of a Penn Civitella Fellowship. His writing has appeared in The Atlantic and Salon, among other places. He teaches at the University of California, Santa Barbara. In Members Only, readers meet Raj Bhatt, a middle-aged Indian-American college lecturer living in Southern California. He's married to a white woman, is the father of two mixed-race kids, and belongs to an exclusive, very white tennis club. And it's there that in the course of one swift week, his life unravels. Raj is hopeful that the tennis club will become more diverse, but in an effort to connect with an African-American couple applying for membership, he says something offensive. He becomes the club pariah, ostracized by the white members whose prejudice he's dealt with for years. Adding insult to injury, he's soon under investigation at the university where he works for reverse racism after a group of students report his alleged anti-Western bias. Kim's interview with Samir begins with her first question. I hope you enjoy their conversation.
Samir, I want to start by asking you about something you've talked a little bit in interviews already about why you wrote this book. And it comes down to your favorite line, it seems to. When a central character first meets Raj, he says, "I knew a Raj in college." And Raj thinks to himself, "Everyone knew a Raj in college." I'm going to ask you to talk to us about a little bit about that, because it seems to me to form really your whole approach to the character of Raj. And I'd like to ask you to go ahead and read that part of the beginning of the novel where that comes from.
Absolutely, Kim. Thank you. First, thank you so much for having me. So in that moment, the Browns, Bill and Valerie Brown, have just come into this membership meeting, and so this is where it starts. Raj introduces himself. Yeah. "I knew a Raj in college," Bill said, smiling. "I think everyone knew a Raj in college, except, of course, the woman from earlier in the evening." Bill had a deep, calming voice, one you might hear on a TV commercial for a Mercedes sedan. "I think he runs Google now, or something." "I use Google," I said, returning his smile. "Can we get you anything?" Suzanne asked. "Water would be great," Bill said. I happened to be the one closest to the table with the drinks. Suzanne glanced at me for the slightest beat of a second. I looked at her as Bill looked at me. How about a sip of something stronger instead?" Bill said, moving toward the table. "I'll get it." I stepped over to the table with him. "What do you like?" he asked, examining the open bottles of white and red. I sensed that he knew his way around labels. I reached for a lone, half-full bottle of a nearly translucent Pinot tucked behind the mineral waters. "This is the high-end stuff." Bill took two clear plastic cups from a stack. I gave us both a liberal pour. Bill took a small sip and then turned to me and said, "It certainly is." Our backs were turned to the rest of the group. Bill ate a dried apricot. I had a piece of salami, and we both took another sip. Before placing the bottle back, I poured us a little more of the wine. "Shall we?" I asked. Bill took his wine in one hand and the bottle of water in the other. He handed the water to his wife and took a seat next to her. I sat down on the couch facing them. For a moment, I wondered whether Bill was originally from the Caribbean. If he was, he would have grown up with Indians. Maybe had a grandfather who had arrived on the island as an indentured servant, worked through his contract, and decided to stay instead of going back to the small Indian village he barely remembered. maybe somehow over the years, the butt had changed to brown. If that was the case, I mused, going back several generations, Bill and I could well be cousins. I'll stop there.
Yeah, that's great. I love how the passage that you chose to read, it's very near the beginning of the book. When As Members Only begins, you are in this scene of this meeting at the tennis club where the central character, Raj Bhatt, is on a committee. He sort of finds himself on this committee that evaluates and I guess indoctrinates new members into the tennis club. I wanted to ask you, when did you start to see this story that you wanted to tell actually unfold? Was there any one event that sort of triggered this scene in your mind of the scene that you start the book with? How'd you get there?
Yeah. So let me say a couple of things about that, right? Which is, so I think that how I got here primarily was Raj Bhatt. And what I mean by that is I've, you know, had Raj Bhatt kind of tapping on my shoulders for quite a bit of time. And what I mean by that is, you know, when Bill says I knew a Raj in college, what I was getting to and what in kind of internally Raj says to himself, everyone knew a Raj in college, that there's a way in which this Indian American character is almost seen as a wallpaper, right? In the sense that he is someone that everyone knew. And what this novel was an occasion for was for me to basically dig into his inner life, right? Yeah. Dig into his sense of desire, of failure, of envy, of joy, right? Like all the things that we attribute to our humanity, right? And there is a way in which I was trying to figure out how to move a character like this from the margins of a room into the center of a room, right? And so if I was thinking about that, this moment at the tennis club becomes incredibly important to me, right? Which is that in the way in which I've thought about Raj as being on the outskirts is in some ways precisely what occurs in this room, right? Which is that he is on the outskirts, but seeing Bill and Valerie Brown walk into the room, suddenly he feels like he is a central part of the conversation as opposed to a kind of, you know, side conversation that is going on.
Right. And can I just jump in here and please ask you to set the scene for us a little bit for people who haven't read the book yet?
Yep.
What's happening in this room with Raj and Bill Brown?
Yeah, so basically, so this is a committee meeting. So there are five committee members, Raj plus four other people. Raj is the only person of color. The other four are white. And the book actually opens with another couple walking in, and Raj introduces himself, and they have this entire conversation for 15 minutes. And at the end of which, the woman, as she's leaving, refers to Raj as Kumar. And mangles his name and doesn't even just mangle his name, right? There's nothing close about Raj and Kumar together. And so he feels particularly kind of irked by this, particularly because he had seen himself arriving at this committee to diversify the space a little bit. A few more applicants come in who I kind of leave off scene. And then Bill and Valerie Brown, an African-American couple, comes in. And I think suddenly Raj is excited. It's because they make possible this thing that he has wanted to do, right? To make the place look more diverse, make the place look more reflective of the world that he is interested in. The group of them have a conversation. So if you can imagine this room, there's Raj, there is Bill and Valerie Brown, who are African-American. There are Mark and Jan Black, who are the white couple that have sponsored Bill and Valerie Brown, and then there is the four other committee members, right? So that if you kind of tally it up, there are, you know, three people of color and six white folks in this room. Mm-hmm. And as the conversation is continuing, the section I read out to you was this first moment where Raj and Bill, or at least from Raj's point of view, Raj is feeling this kind of connection to Bill, right? It's because mm-hmm. he feels a connection to him because he, you know, as the passage suggests, right, that he feels that they are similar kinds of people, that they experience the world in a similar way. But what he also feels is a deep amount of envy for this man, right? Which is he walks in, his clothes, he is impeccably dressed. He, as it turns out, he is a remarkable tennis player, and he decided to basically forego going on the pro tour so that he could go to medical school, right? Mm-hmm. And so he mirrors kind of all of Raj's sense of having failed at both as a tennis player and in terms of his work. Mm-hmm. This interview continues on, and Raj is thinking to himself, and in essence, as it is coming to a close, he blurts out something that he didn't intend to, but his intention is not the issue here. He did it, and he feels instantly horrible about having done so. But this moment serves as the kind of inciting incident to get this horrible week that Raj then has going, right? And it's this moment that I take as a way of starting to say, okay, we've not been talking about race. Now race has been pushed completely to the forefront of our conversation.
Yeah.
What are we going to talk about now? How are we going to deal with all of this, you know?
Yeah. And it's, I mean, I want to come back to this moment, but as you were talking, I was thinking about Raj's week. It's by no means the worst thing that happens to him during the week, right? So, I think we as readers then get to follow Raj through this like hellscape of a week. And I think while you were talking, it sort of, it reminded me a little bit about like, you know, when the pandemic first started, we thought, you know, something bad would happen. And then we thought, oh, that's really awful. And then something, you know, something worse happens seemingly every week. Anyway, let me come back to what you were talking about.
Yeah, no, and we can also, I mean, we can talk about the week, right? And it is that in a way, the novelistic demands of all the things that happened in the week, but also that sometimes we just have really, really bad weeks, you know, and things pile up, and then suddenly everything, like a little bit of a powder keg, everything kind of blows up, which is what this novel in essence does.
I think that's true. You know, he walks out of the room and tries to go about his week, and everybody around him keeps returning to this conversation. And when Raj is sort of trying to, you know, he's like desperately seeking a few minutes to himself to just try to parse out what happened and what he said and what he's going to do. And then he goes to teach class that week. Can you talk a little bit about what happens to him there on campus?
Yeah. So this is, I've set this novel up in these kind of parallel narratives, right? So there is this life he has at this club, where he is, in essence, accused by a group of liberal kind of white members of being a racist. The next morning, he wakes up, he teaches at a university, and, you know, one of the things I want to particularly point out here is that he is a lecturer at this institution, by which I mean that the kind of feelings of not belonging and not having membership that he feels at this club is a similar experience he has at the university, right? Where he is, he doesn't have the kind of safety that comes with tenure or a tenure track job. So he is feeling a certain uncertainty in this space as well. Mm-hmm. He goes and gives a lecture, which is, he refers to it as this kind of bread and butter lecture, right? This lecture that he's been giving for years on this notion of Orientalism by the great literary critic Edward Said. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the lecture, he says something about Christianity, which a student records and in essence accuses him of being a reverse racist, right? That he is speaking ill of Christianity. And so in essence, I've placed Raj in this middle space between being accused by one end of the political spectrum for being a racist, and then on the other end of the political spectrum for being a different kind of racist.
Mm-hmm. Why did you want to put him in that situation?
Because I think, you know, for two reasons, that I am interested in this book with the idea of what middleness looks like, mm-hmm. and what it means to not feel like you belong to either group, that, you know, in this particular case, right, that there's this kind of this one set of people and another set of people, right? And so yeah. that middleness, that kind of sense of liminality that I think Raj has experienced in his life already, mm-hmm. what I wanted to do is basically to take the experience he has already had and find a dramatic moment within the novel where that is made explicit, right? Mm-hmm. So that he is just in the middle, basically kind of being talked to and talked at from both sides.
Yeah, he sort of tries to go about his week in a normal fashion. And what you do is to show all of his interactions, large and small, with everyone from the character's children to his dean, and they sort of pop up in front of him wherever he goes, and he has to have these different conversations, some of which are illuminating to him and some of which are make him feel more defensive and angry. I was impressed as a reader with the women characters in this book, and not just the character of Raj's wife. I liked what Raj shows of the women at the tennis club who were giving him grief. Those seem to be well-rounded characters, even as you're showing how Raj sort of has to bounce off them to just have a normal day. I wanted to ask you if you could talk about how you approached the character of Suzanne.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. So there are a couple of things I want to say about this, which is that, you know, in terms of, Raj is surrounded by a series of female characters, right? Which is, it's Eva, Suzanne within
That's
the committee.
His wife.
And,
right.
and of course, so Eva, his wife, Suzanne in the committee, Leslie, who's a secondary character mm-hmm. in that committee as well. The other overarching female character in his life is his mother, right? Mm-hmm. And these daily calls he puts into his mother to check in on her life as a way of her checking on his life, right? And, you know, the last character, of course, is Emily Baker, who arrives later in the week, who is the poet friend that he knew in graduate school, who's had this incredible success, right? Let me speak to Suzanne a little bit, right? Which is that what I was trying to figure out with Suzanne, right? So we begin with Suzanne, in essence, asking him to apologize, right? And
right.
I think this is one of the things that I was really interested in working through with this book, which is mm-hmm. what does it mean for people to make mistakes? Who gets to make those mistakes?
Yeah.
Who is asked to apologize for those mistakes? And who gets to survive the apology, right?
Right.
And I think all of those pieces are there. And I think with Suzanne, she begins by basically demanding this apology, right? But
yeah.
what I tried to do and what I tried to work hard at doing was to also allow her to be a character that listens, right? So that if she begins by talking in the first chapter, I think a part of what I tried to have her do in the second, third, and fourth and consecutive chapters is to try to engage with what Raj is saying, what he is doing, is because she turns from being the one demanding the apology to the one being kind of the go-between between Raj and the kinds of outlandish demands that Mark and Jan Black, who have sponsored the Browns, are making of him, right?
Right.
And I think that was just for me, you know, that Forster idea of the flat versus the round character. The round characters are just way more interesting to write. We for the most part, we live around a lot of round characters, right? And yes. I think it's one of the gifts you can give as a writer is to take the time to work through that roundness. And of course, roundness does not always result in the person being good or person being bad, right?
Yeah.
The very nature of roundness is that we exist in that contradiction of being good and bad at the same time.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask you specifically about Suzanne is because she's in the room when Raj makes this first sort of step off the cliff, right? And
yeah.
You get to see the Raj react to what he said and just sit there with that tension and horror. And then you also see the other characters react to it. And then you take a little bit of time after the initial, what Raj says to see everyone react in their own time. And so it feels really realistic. And you get to, as the reader, go, huh, what would I do? If I said something like that, saying something that could be perceived as racist when it was, just sort of an offhand comment that it made by somebody who's trying to lighten the mood, right? Just taking the time to see it land was, I think, really well done.
Yeah. No, thank you. And I think that is in some ways. What I tried to do in that first chapter is, you know, it's almost like to quiet the scene down, right? Because, and to quiet the moments down is because that is, in some ways, when something crazy happens, your instinct is to allow it to be crazy, right? Meaning that to allow the narrative to move that way. And I tried my best to see what it would mean for us to just remain in the scene. And to see the kinds of things people say and the kinds of things people do not say in a moment like this.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I wanted to add about Suzanne is, you know, he said, you know, when the first couple that comes in and when one of them calls him Kumar, Suzanne is the only one that knows why that is troublesome for Raj, right? Like,
yeah.
the two of them make eye contact. So this is, I think, hopefully from the beginning, I set her up as a very different character than, for example, Leslie, who has a very different relationship to this social space of this, the tennis club, the TC, and mm-hmm. is, I think, ultimately just much more interested in maintaining that social space. And I think Suzanne recognizes that her own location in that social space is complex and complicated.
Yeah.
And I think she is open enough to allow all of these voices in, some of which she may agree with and some of which she may not agree with.
Right. Right. That uncomfortable moment that begins the book, it leads me to the next sort of uncomfortable moment when Raj finds out that he's been recorded and that a certain subset of his students is really sort of actively turning against him. Mm-hmm. And can you talk a little bit about how you placed the character of Raj in that tense situation and what you were thinking as you were writing and letting that scene play out?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think what I was, you know, I have spent my entire adult life on a college campus, right, of one kind of another, between undergraduate and graduate school and various teaching jobs, right? So it's a space that I know intimately, mm-hmm. and it's a space that's also changed, right, which is that when I was in college, you know, I took notes, And then I did this thing where the second I was done with the class, with the lecture, I would go to the library and I would rewrite those notes. Somebody had given me this tip, and it was the key to my success in college, which is I had to reinterpret the notes that I had just taken, right?
Yeah.
Students engage with information in a different way, right? It is disseminated in a different way. Yeah. It is literally recorded in a different way, right? Yeah. And so I think the tension in that moment was that the section that is removed, right, the section that is recorded and then disseminated online is something that is taken out of a 75-minute lecture, right? Mm-hmm. And so at a certain level, you can always find something somebody has said within the span of a 75-minute talk and kind of find what is problematic with it, right? And mm-hmm. I think we see this all the time.
Yeah.
And so I think that was it was almost a sense that there is an inevitability that at some point this was going to happen to Raj, right? Mm-hmm. That he was going to say something, which is not even a joke, right? Which is literally a very simple, basic argument that he takes from a literary text or a kind of a work of literary criticism that has been celebrated, you know, across the humanities for the last 40 years, right? It's not like he's saying anything radical. He's in fact saying something at this point fairly down the middle in terms of what this notion of Orientalism means.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what it is he says? He talks about Christianity.
Yeah. So I think that basically he has given this lecture on, he's given a lecture on the history of Indian or Hindu spiritual men, and they have traditionally been Hindu in the American case, who come to America and basically sell kind of Indian spirituality, right? Mm-hmm. And he's given this lecture, and basically he ends the lecture by saying that part of the reason perhaps that Americans or some Americans were so taken with these holy men is that they felt that it filled the hole left behind by Christianity, right? Mm-hmm. That in their move away from a traditional kind of Christian religious engagement, that when they left that, this filled their religious desire, right?
Sure.
And so that's it, right? So he's not, I mean, and what he's accused of is basically saying that Christianity is empty, as opposed to what the lecture said was that there was an emptiness that was left behind, and it was filled by these Hindu spiritual men, right?
Right.
And so a set of words taken out of context and shifted around to serve the purposes of this particular student and then this kind of website that is interested in finding a moment to kind of as a perfect example of how liberal universities have gotten.
Right. Right. I think a perfect illustration of Raj's middleness, right? The second he says anything that where he's stepping outside of the bounds that have captured him as a lecturer, when he even hints at, you know, something that forces his students to think outside of their own experience, he's sort of immediately hit over the head with it.
Yeah. I mean, this is circling back to our middle conversation from a little while ago, right? Mm-hmm. Which is that part of what I'm trying to do with this middleness in the context of how you just talked about it is that on one hand to say that this middleness can be very dangerous, right? Which is that he is, because he doesn't belong to any one group, meaning that there's no one there to protect him. There's no one there to kind of say, don't worry about it, we'll figure this out, right? And of course, those people actually do exist in the novel, right? Cliff, who is his chair in this department, says, don't worry about it, we'll figure this out, right?
Right.
But what I also want to say about this middleness is that it's also an incredibly powerful place, Raj is by vocation an anthropologist, right? And as an anthropologist, you know, at a certain meta level, this book is also a work of ethnography. And what I mean by that is that it's an ethnographic reflection of the way in which race and class operate in a particular moment in American life, mm-hmm. right? And so that what I also think about this space that Raj occupies is it's observational, right? In the way yeah. that his ethnography is observational, it is powerful when you don't belong to any one group. You can look around, right? You can you can see how the rules of one group operates, and you can see how the rules of another group operates. And this is, you know, a part of what he has to do, and is also ultimately a part of the larger immigrant experience that he has, right? Which is that there are no rules on how to live, but he has to kind of figure them out himself as he goes along, which serves him really well, right? If you have to do the work of figuring it out, then it can also be a very powerful space as well.
Right. And he does that not just on the college campus, but within his sort of devotion to the sport of tennis, right? And I think throughout, if I remember correctly, throughout the course of the week, he keeps just trying to get back to the tennis club just to hit a few balls, just so he can be in a safe, calm space with tennis.
Yeah.
And his love of tennis kind of mirrors yours. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. You know, tennis is a funny sport, right? Like, you know, one of the characters early on says, I don't understand this thing with tennis. You have like yeah. basically a series of squares and you're just hitting the ball back and forth, right? Yeah. And so if you don't like the sport or if you don't know the sport, you can look outside or stand outside of it and think that it makes no sense, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but for Raj, I think in the interiority of the novel, the court is a space of solace, right? It is a space where he knows the rules. He knows yeah. when a ball is out, when a ball is in. He knows how to hit a backhand, a forehand, all the things you need to do, not to necessarily win, but at least to engage in the game,
yeah.
right? Becomes, you know, that becomes the metaphor of the game within the text, right? Which is that, sure, he wants to win, but ultimately he wants to be in a space where he can control what it is that he is doing. And that control is in his hands, literally, right? It is how he plays. Now, what I do also want to say about that, so that for both Raj and I, you know, tennis becomes that space of grace, right? Yeah. And what he's looking for with Bill Brown ultimately is, you know, look, they may become friends or not become friends after that, you know, when they first meet. But one of the things he says is, all I wanted to do was be on that tennis court and hit tennis balls with him, you yeah. know?
Yeah.
But the second kind of related thing I'd like to say about tennis, and this gets to the larger questions of the novel, is that while the court itself is this kind of distinct space, right, the process it takes to get to the tennis court is not distinct. And what I mean by that is, you know, a part of the narrative around tennis and sports in general in America is that it's this space of pure meritocracy. Mm. And part of what I'm trying to say with the book is that the physical space might be, but to get to it, to get there and to be good at it requires a set of circumstances that have nothing to do with pure merit, right? Which is that class shapes how well you do in the sport. And it's not the only determinant, but it is certainly a determinant in your ability to continue on with it.
Right. And Raj, you know, has really got a lot of years working towards the roles that he's able to play both at the tennis club and on the campus, right? So there's a certain there's this feeling of getting to watch someone who is, feeling relatively secure in his place in these communities, and having, we as readers kind of watch as everything that he believes to be true about his place in those places is tested.
Tested, and I think perhaps a reflection that there's a certain precariousness, yeah, like at the heart of the things that we feel secure about, right? The things that we think we're good with, right? That it's like, I'm good. I've been here for a while. I figured out how all of this stuff works. You know, a part of the reckoning of the novel, or part of the tension of the novel, is in fact a thing said here or there, a thing recorded here or there, can really shake the ground beneath your feet very, very quickly. And I think in some ways what I find tragic about Raj, and I think what Raj finds tragic about this situation, is that you can indeed work this hard, and some of these kind of foundations can shake pretty significantly, even when you don't want them to, and where you're not always fully responsible for them shaking in the way that they're shaking.
Yeah. Do you feel like you have spent enough time with this character, or do you want to put him in more difficult situations in the future?
Yeah. That's a really interesting question, and it's a question that I have thought a lot about. And what I mean by that is I want to sit with Raj longer, yeah, right? Because I want to sit with Raj longer because the crises that Raj is having are crises that I am interested in following through, right? Meaning that he is a character who I've created with a very specific history in mind, right? Mm-hmm. He was born in India. He arrived in this country when he was 8. He's lived in this country for a majority of his life, right? So I tried to be as specific about that as I can. At the same time, part of what my ambition with this book was to have written a kind of a mashup of a campus novel and a midlife crisis novel, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I think that he is hopefully a rich enough character for us to kind of continue on with him. So I will say right now, a month out from having published this book, Raj is still hanging around pretty significantly with me. And and the way in which he uses humor to deflect some fairly difficult situations is a kind of dynamic that I continue to be interested in.
Mm-hmm. That's great. I'm certainly interested in him as a reader. I want to see what he does next.
Yeah, and I'm really happy to hear that. Right, is because I think, and I'm also interested in seeing what some of these other characters do next in relationship to him, right?
Yeah, sure.
And I think that there is a way in which I want to grow the world, right? And yeah, that there is a way to kind of think about this in a way more broadly, right? Which is, I am careful to talk about kind of characters who are universal, right? And I think that's a different conversation about what marks universalness. So I'm just going to place that aside for a second, right? But I do think that a character like Raj is reflective also of our particular American moment, right?
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
So I think that for me to sit with Raj longer is for me to also sit with the transitioning of this country that we are all collectively experiencing,
right?
So that I feel like I am as much of a of a creator of Raj as I am a student of our particular social, cultural, historical moment.
Right.
And, you know, I set this book and I very kind of vaguely in the kind of early part of fall of 2016. And I want to kind of see what the years bring, right? And clearly the country has changed and will continue to change. And I think he's a good conduit to thinking about those larger changes.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Both on, at the tennis club and on the campus and kind of wherever he goes.
Yeah, out into the world in a certain way. Right?
Yeah. For our last question, is there anything that I've kind of forgot to ask about this character, about this book that you think is really important?
So, I mean, there are a couple of things. I already mentioned kind of the aspects of it as a campus novel, but, you know, perhaps the one other thing that I am trying to work through with this book and with Raj is the nature of contemporary parenting. In his particular case, the nature of contemporary fatherhood, mm-hmm. right? One of the questions I have been asked often, and it kind of relates to what you're saying here, is that, you know, in novels about midlife crises, the men at a certain level bail, right? That the social situation they find themselves in, or the personal situation they find themselves in, the idea is that they can only find themselves if they are away from their domestic space, right? Mm-hmm. And what I was really curious about, right, and I made a very conscious decision to mm-hmm. make Raj stay. Right. Mm-hmm. And in that in a way, while everything is going really badly, his family remains a ballast, even as they are arguing and even as the daily life of two parents working and two children in school is exhausting. Right. Mm-hmm. There is never in my mind a question that part of his life is intact, right? And I think that what I was, in the context of that, what I was really interested in fleshing out is what these kind of pushing and pulls of kind of masculinity and success and failure in relationship to being a father to children shapes Raj's life, mm-hmm. right? And that was a moment that I found particularly interesting for me as a writer, and mm-hmm. to your question about kind of wanting to hang on or kind of hang out with him for a little bit longer. Mm-hmm. That's also another aspect of this, right? Which is that, you know, I spend time with the two children he has, Neil and Arun, but I'm also interested in seeing them grow up and the way in which Raj engages with them. Because a part mm-hmm. of the kind of consistent presence is, you know, he is, his father and his grandfather are very much present in small and big ways throughout the text. And so I was particularly interested in kind of creating the through line between these men, right?
Yeah.
And you see, the grandfather who comes of age in the independence movement in India, the father who moves to America, and then the son who basically grows up in America, right? Mm-hmm. Which is, what are the things that shaped their lives? What are the things that kind of made their hearts beat? And that was one of the kind of things that I was particularly interested in working out. So
I'm really glad you mentioned that, because you're right. I didn't realize that for most midlife crisis novels, it's sort of like, there's a moment where there's this Shakespearean idea of we'll now repair to the woods and you know, be alone for 2 weeks and figure things out and then go back, or you maybe start, you know, I don't know, the protagonists in a lot of these certainly men midlife crisis campus novels are around, you know, falling in love inappropriately with a younger person and removing yourself from the, you know, whatever's going on in your life that way. That's exactly right. Is that, and you know, Raj never runs from what he is meant to face, right? They, you know, people come up to him all the time and say, well, if you just apologize, it'll go away, you know? And he doesn't refuse to apologize, but he really just sort of sits there with everything and lets the reader in on his thought process as he sits with it. So that's a really cool thing about this character in this book.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, it is, you know, look, I've read a lot of campus novels and a lot of midlife crisis novels, right? Yeah. Like it is, I love them. Yeah. So, but I did, I mean, and I appreciate you saying that, which is that I was very mindful in remembering those novels and trying to move away from them in one very, very specific way, right? Yeah. Which is that there is kind of what, you know, if his love of tennis is based on what you can produce when you're an individual, yeah, his existence in his life is based on what you can produce when you exist in a community.
Yeah.
And those two things are at tension with one another, and they just have to remain at tension with one another, right? That they, in tension meaning that he can exist in both of these same spaces simultaneously, and I think he's good with that, and as the writer, I feel particularly good with that.
I love the book, and thank you so much for talking with me today.
Kim, thank you so much. Thank you. These were great questions, and I was really happy to have this conversation with you.
From the Media Factory in the south end of Burlington, Vermont, this is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. This is Write the Book, the show for writers and curious readers. That was Kim McQueen's interview with Samir Pandya. You can learn more about Samir's work at samirpandya.net. Kim McQueen has written two novels, People Who Hate America and Out Out, a novel of women and apes. Her stories and essays have been featured in The Inquisitive Eater, The Southeast Review, Creative Loafing Atlanta, Wisdom Daily, The Morning News, and other print and digital publications. These days, Kim is cooking, drinking, and writing about Italian food and wine for a book that's forthcoming in 2021. More information about her work can be found at kimmcqueen.com. Samir Pandya's novel Members Only concerns Raj Bhatt's enjoyment of and desire to fit in at his posh tennis club. This week's Write the Book prompt is to write about a character feeling out of place, whether this place is a school or work, a club, or maybe an old group where fitting in never used to be a problem. What hurdles have to be overcome? Who or what presents the obstacles to feeling like a part of things, and how does your character cope, well or poorly? Do their goals change? Do they capitulate? Good luck with your work in the coming week, and tune in next week for another prompt or suggestion. Speaking of next week on Write the Book, I will share an interview with former Vermont Poet Laureate Sidney Lee, who has a new illustrated epic along with James Kochalka, former Cartoon Laureate from Vermont. Their new project is called The Exquisite Triumph of Worm Boy, and it's published by Word Galaxy. The Sundog Poetry Center has announced that they're going to have an inaugural Vermont Book Award of their own for a first or second book of poetry. The deadline for submission is October 31st, and you can find more information about this award at sundogpoetry.org. I've been closing out the show regularly with thoughts about the pandemic and trying to support authors by attending their online events, reading their blogs and virtual book tours, and finding your way to their books. And I still hope that you're able to do all of that and that you're able to write. I also want to just add that you still have time to make a plan for voting. So that's another theme I'm trying to address in the coming weeks. Go online if you want to figure out how to register to vote. Look into what is required in your state and in do that thing that is required, please. It's important. You might feel powerless to affect change, but you can affect change. Collectively, we have great power. I am not making a political statement. I'm not telling you who to vote for, But voting is patriotic. It's doable. This year, it might take a little bit of planning, so make that plan, please. And for all of you who are trying to write these days, do be sure to check the archives of Write the Book, because as with today's episode, each episode does offer a prompt written out on the podcast site under the recorded interview. So check those out. I would love your feedback about the show. Let me know if you'd like me to announce certain events or interview certain authors. Be sure to tell your friends about Write the Book and about the podcast site, writethebook.podbean.com. We're also on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, all the podcast sites. You can visit Write the Book on Twitter and on Facebook for updates, and you can also access the podcast through my own website, which is shelaughswithoutus.com. If you like the show, please rate it on iTunes, like it on Facebook, and talk about it. I'm Shayla Connor Shapiro. You've been listening to Write the Book. This is 99.3 FM, WBTV LP, Burlington, Vermont. Streaming online at 99.3wbtv.org. Stay well and have a great week, and also vote. Figure out how to do it safely and soon.